on June 27th, Saturday night, I believe, at 8 o'clock.
We should talk to you about a live broadcast.
This is Danette Gorman from HelpSyriasKids.org. We are connecting the Hudson community with a Syrian refugee camp in Katarmaya, Lebanon. You're listening to WGXC ACRA.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA or anytime at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Charles Haler of Coxsackie, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Like good old tap water. Just turn it on and get it.
Welcome to Welcome to Clubhouse Radio, live from the Castviews Clubhouse on 90.7 FM WGXC, broadcasting Agra, Catskill, and Hudson. That song was Rock With You by Michael Jackson. Stay tuned for great music discussion and two interviews with two very worthy people. We will kick off our show after the local news and weather.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, April 16th. Early this morning, it's 32 degrees in Twilight Park and 39 in Kingston. Light rain is expected all day. Any remaining snow ends by 9 a.m. Temperatures reach 48 degrees by 5 p.m. Overnight, rain tapers off and temperatures reach down to 40 degrees. Tomorrow will be dry with a light breeze and a high of 55. Sunday gets a little warmer, reaching 60 degrees. However, there is a little bit of an afternoon rain expected. Pollen levels for today will be low. The weekend, however, gets into the medium-high territory by Sunday. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:23 a.m., high tide at 6:12 a.m., low tide again at 1:13 p.m., and high tide again at 7:09 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 60 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:22 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:09 a.m. Looking way up, we see G1 class storms are expected for tomorrow. Solar wind speed is currently 456 kilometers per second at 6.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently very poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 22, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton reports for Columbia Green Media that the COVID-19 pandemic may last longer in Greene County than elsewhere as supply is now outstripping demand for the vaccines. Legislature Chair Patrick Linger says several hundred doses of vaccines went unused this week. Linger said, and I quote, "We're getting to the point where supply is increasing enough to be able to hit most of the people who are going to want a vaccine, which is not anywhere near where the state or CDC sees as herd immunity," end quote. Only about 38% of adults in Greene County have received at least one dose of a vaccine, far short of the 70% that scientists say is needed to end the pandemic. News this week about possible problems with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine may be affecting turnouts. Linger said, and I quote, "It was almost like turning on a light switch," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Last week we had an easy time filling pods. This week it's exactly the opposite and we'll probably wind up sending doses back. Our emergency operations manager was expecting we'd have another week or two before hitting that saturation point. It's really showing up as being challenging to fill the vaccine slots," end quote. Greene County Public Health has open appointments for vaccines at the New Baltimore Firehouse on April 19th and April 26th in Ashland. And you can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sarah Trapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Catskill Village Board selected a new village president at its organizational meeting April 14th. Peter Gross III, a Republican, was picked by board members to succeed Vincent Seeley. Gross was elected in March to a second term on the board. Seeley resigned January 8th after a four-month absence related to a new business venture. Catskill Village presidents are appointed by the village board and are not directly elected by voters. Village Vice President Joseph Kozlowski has served as acting president following Seeley's departure. In remarks April 14th, Gross said he did not expect to take on the leadership role when he first ran for office. He said, and I quote, "I just wanted to get in there and make a difference," end quote. Gross said he enjoys being part of the village government, and I quote, "I enjoy listening to the concerns of residents, and I like to think everything out before I make a decision. Trying to make the right decision all the time is key," end quote. Gross's priority list includes getting the village's finances in order, maintaining the parks, and making sure everything is looking its best so everyone can enjoy the summer. The village has some major infrastructure projects coming up, including a new water main for Main Street and a settling pond for a water treatment plant, as well as some new development coming to the village, such as Taco Bell, Well Now, and more. Grass said, and I quote, "I'm excited to get to work," end quote. Kozlowski will continue to serve as vice president. Grassi said a special election will be held at a later date to fill Seeley's unexpired term. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Ariana Jimenez is reporting for the Legislative Gazette. Under new legislation approved April 14th by the state Senate, the right to vote would be restored to formerly incarcerated people in New York immediately upon release from prison. The corresponding assembly bill, sponsored by Assemblymember Daniel O'Connor, is on its third reading. Under the measure, people would not have to wait until they have reached the final date of their sentence to register to vote or to vote in an election. O'Donnell said, and I quote, "There is a need for people who have been formerly incarcerated to reintegrate into society in every way possible," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Other parts of the United States have begun to restore voting rights. Parole is a tough thing to survive while you are living in the community and living the law-abiding life. The right to participate in the democracy of voting should not be impeded," end quote. O'Donnell's bill would permanently restore the vote to individuals released on parole and require officials to give newly eligible voters an opportunity to register upon release. Sean Morales Doyle, the deputy director of the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, said that under existing New York law, those people convicted of felonies who have been released from prison cannot vote while they are under community supervision unless they have had the right restored by a certificate of release, a certificate of good conduct, or a pardon from the governor. And I quote, "New Yorkers who have been released from prison are working, paying taxes, and raising families, but they have no voice in the government. Today's Senate vote brings them a step closer to regaining that voice," end quote. And you can read the full story in the Legislative Gazette. Melanie Lekachevic is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Following months of debate, the Athens Village Board April 14th adopted a law prohibiting parking on the west side of North Franklin Street. Local law number 5 of 2021 was approved due to safety concerns over the width of the street and emergency vehicle access. A public hearing was held on October 28th and again on March 24th to gauge public reaction to the new law. Mayor Amy Sirago said officials from the fire department, police department, and Department of Public Works were also consulted. She said, and I quote, "We have heard everyone on this subject," end quote. Former Mayor Stephen Bradadich, who left office at the beginning of April, and DPW Chief Anthony Proper measured the streets to determine if emergency vehicles are able to get through if cars are parked on both sides of the road. Sirago said village officials have determined the width of the street makes parking on both sides dangerous. Village trustee Joshua Lipsman said of reducing the parking on one side of the street, and I quote, "I am feeling that we should not take anything from our residents unless we absolutely have to, and which we must on the northernmost portion of the street for safety," end quote. Department of Public Works Director Anthony Proper said, and I quote, "What is the big inconvenience? Because they have to park their car on one side and walk an extra 5 steps to get into their house," end quote. Proper said only a couple of residents will have to move their vehicles to the opposite side and that safety during plowing season and clearing the roads is critical. When it came time to vote on the law, Lipsman was the lone dissenter. The mayor said new signs will be posted and residents will be notified by the village when the law goes into effect. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And a nice weekend.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Wayfarms WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Wayfarm Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdermar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Here's what we do with the clubhouse. It be fun at the clubhouse. Music stay loud at the clubhouse. Staff be cool at the clubhouse. Not just mine, that's your house. Music program with the clubhouse. Got a drum set at the clubhouse. Got a piano at the clubhouse. Make your own beats at the clubhouse. Get on the video with the clubhouse. Share your voice at the clubhouse. Express yourself at the clubhouse. Tracks program at the clubhouse. Be yourself at the clubhouse. No judgment at the clubhouse. No drama at the clubhouse. We accept you at the clubhouse. Got field trips at the clubhouse. Got art supplies at the clubhouse. Creativity at the clubhouse. Paint your own wall at the clubhouse. Got a TV at the clubhouse. Got Wi-Fi at the clubhouse. Food and snacks at the clubhouse. Hope to see you at the clubhouse.
You are just listening to an original Clubhouse theme song in our Tracks Music Program by DJ WIC. Welcome back to Clubhouse Radio. I am DJ Ricky. I'm here with
sound engineer Sean Money.
And
this is Ma Badila of Data Data International Folkloric Theater.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so all views expressed on Clubhouse Radio are our truth. You may not represent the views and opinions of the Clubhouse's parent organization or the Mental Health Association of Columbia. So, Mrs. Badila, you have a theater production called Fire Dance, right? Coming out soon, May 23rd.
They're starting on May 21st. And the production is one in a series of, which will now be the 16th, of these community theater projects where children perform with their parents. People from all socioeconomic and cultural groups are going to participate in a production which will be a bonding, grounding event which celebrates community. In effect, we do these deliberately to engage in the understanding of a very humble place we have to find ourselves in with regard to being part of a world community. In effect, there's a concept we call in traditional African culture. It's called Ubuntu, where we understand that I am because we are. And then we recognize that we are as a collective because I am. Each individual of the collective is so important that the collective is not whole without them. And again, they are not fully engaged in all their potential without their connection to the wholeness of which is their collective community. And so we build world community by understanding these productions are always from some culture here. We go to China, we go to Yugoslavia, we go to Nigeria, tell stories that come from different people, different perspectives so that we can get to know each other as a global community. Fire dance is an essential understanding of the fire within us that gives us the passion, the verve, the essence that gives us the want to survive. And then the dance is just us acknowledging and telling our stories, conducting a proper ownership of our own narrative and bringing back the essential power and verve and passion of life as it once was a celebration, not an endurance. People go up and go to work, come back, and they're stressed and they're tired and they've got all this imbalance that comes from not realizing life is a most wonderful adventure when you acknowledge the full potential of all that you are living for, which means not just go to work and go home, but engage in the day. Make it one of a kind, one day being only one day, and you make an adventure out of all the experiences which you endure and which you engage in throughout every single day of your life. We celebrate life this way. And these stories we're telling, because it's a selection of stories of what we call First Nation people, the very first of the nations that occupy a place, the indigenous people. And so them being the essentials of who you see here before everything else happened, the Holocaust that happened to them, millions and millions of them destroyed, displaced. We're not going to tell that story. We're going to tell the story that they tell their children. Animal stories, learn about the character, learn about integrity, to realize how it is to play fairly and to understand what it means to share a forest, to understand we're neighbors in a world and we must look at each other with a simple reciprocity of giving and receiving. And it's not so difficult when we realize we're sitting in an abundance where there's everything we need. But we often forget that with the introduction of the me-ism, the greed of I want it all. That's a very grave error that humans have been afflicted with. It's like a sickness. And it can be healed through the understanding of what Ubuntu means, what community means, and what our true and humble place within a community recognizably requires. You must acknowledge the giving and receiving to be a fully integrated member of a society, of a community. You must realize to be humble, you must be able to give as much as you are prepared to take. It's not so hard.
So how long would you say it took you to make all these stories and all this stuff?
Well, many of the stories I take from learning traditional folklore of different people. And there are many, 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 many stories that I find intriguing, and some of them are so powerful in their lessons. Like the one story of Anansi's 6 children who each had magical powers. And their 6 magical powers were able to save their father's life when he was in danger. But those very same children became almost enemies when he was going to give a gift, the moon, to only one who did the most. That's the way we forget who we are when we only see one, me, just myself and my gifts.
Selfishness.
Yeah. And then the whole idea of ego where we have it, but it must not overcome our sense of integrity. It must not overwhelm our sense of community, where we realize you might have a lot, but your neighbor has a lot as well. And if you only see your own gifts, you cannot acknowledge and appreciate theirs. So it's a lesson of life when we learn how to step back a little bit and let others have an opportunity to shine. We all are brilliant. We all shine. But if we don't let another person shine, we tend to put them in the dark. And we overwhelm them with our brilliance. And it's really not fair. We don't get to learn what they could have offered by not allowing them to shine. These are the types of things we try to teach, because every story is a lesson. This is why we tell stories. In fact, I told you once before, people say you need stories more than bread. It's a symbol. It's an expression that just says, stories are nurturing. Let them feed you. And they teach you. They feed your mind. Feeding your mind helps yourself understand where you stand, where you belong, where you are going, because you have a rooted understanding of what are the values that are intrinsic to your development. And then that gives you a good footing, a good sense of what I should be looking forward to and what I should be avoiding. because I'll break away from my good character. I want to build a strong personality and character where I can see to myself as growing in a sense that's productive, where I could be welcomed anywhere because I'm honest. I could be appreciated because I'm giving. I'm not only taking. And it's very important, these stories, because it's children and their parents working together with their neighbors, performing, rehearsing. They bond, and some of these bonds have gone on and on for many, many years. People have become friends over these stories. Adults in the community who are civic leaders, who are shop owners, who have even been in political positions on the school board and all this. Many of those people have performed in these plays over the years. We began in 2002 when we had the director of the youth center, youth department, former Mayor Dick Tracy. He found it in his heart to believe in the programming that we proposed. And from then on, we started doing these plays. Jan Hanvik, who was the director of the Columbia County Council on the Arts, he put a lot of effort into finding us funding, teaching us how to apply for these grants. And now over time, we have come to have lists of people like the CREATE, the organization now, which was the Council on the Arts of Greene County. It's the Council for Resources to Enrich the Arts, Technology, and Education. They are the basic management organization for these artist grants funding to help us who have these stories to tell be able to take care of funds, you know, for the expenses of doing what you do and then getting the materials that you need. And of course we have major funding. The Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene Counties has been behind the last few plays we've produced with support, advice, and encouragement, and it's been vital because otherwise it would have been very difficult. And then, of course, you have WJXC Radio, who the great elder Alan Skerritt, and the new youth progressor. I mean, I really appreciate that you're taking on programming and learning how to engage in community dynamics of communicating what's happening in your community, because that means you're going to grow up understanding the value of that, that enriching rapport with the communication, and also you're going to learn about all these things that are going on that you might have ignored if you were not involved in promoting it for people. So it's fantastic. We've had people in the community, like organizations, the Hawthorne Valley Association came down and gave us some help. Light Form Studio with Laura Summer. I mean, people all around have been looking at what we're doing and realizing this is a message that teaches us in a simple way, stories. That everybody loves stories, but in that story, like this year, Fire Dance, it's a story dealing with redemption. I mean, we do things that we could regret. I make mistakes. I'll probably make many more. But if I want to truly find peace in my heart and be forgiven or find redemption, I have to first start with forgiving myself. I can't constantly think of, dang, I messed up. Well, I should have done. You can't catch it back. Should, would, could. You can't catch that. What you have to do is from here, I'm going to be more mindful and listen more carefully before I respond to something that I hear. Maybe I'll find that that person was going to say something that linked into what I had on my mind, and we pretty much agreed before I even started the argument, that kind of thing. And you could just, anything. It could have even been something very, very big, very deep, very harsh that you did wrong to yourself or to others. Forgiveness is vital in moving on with our lives. When we live in guilt and shame, we cannot progress. And if you cannot forgive, sometimes that weight of the pain or the anguish that someone put on you, it's weight on you. You can't continue with your heart light when you have that weight there. So it's important to deal with what we call redemption. And so this play deals with stories where wrong has been committed. At the same time, redemption has happened for a cause. And I don't want to give away how and why, but it's very important to know, even though you're forgiven, things don't always have to go your way. Afterward, there are still consequences.
Yes. Personally, how do you feel like your play is going to go? Like, do you feel like it'll inspire or give other people a proper message?
I've been, I'm going to say, very humbled by the great outpouring of support that we receive everywhere we go, every organization, everybody, even individuals as well as groups have shown us so much love and honor and respect what we're doing. I mean, even, for example, we're performing at the Basilica Hudson. They hosted us in 2012, and things were going difficultly for us. We had a hard time in other ways, and that was the year my husband passed, and it was like, how are we going to go through this? It was like too much, you know? They came in like, it just swooped us off of the feeling of it's not going to be able to happen by allowing us to happen here where we needed all the support we could get, and everywhere we turned, support came through. You know, the Opera House, we did it there, and Camp Hill, and the schools, and everywhere we've gone. We found that when we needed community to support what we were doing, and they knew what we were doing and why we were doing it, there was never anything but open doors. So we believe that's a sign of how well it's received, the audiences standing up at the last performance or the end of every performance, the way people have come and made offerings at the end of a show. In fact, one time we did a show with John L. We did Ambrosia. It was a celebration of stories from around the world, from different continents. And a couple came up and they gave us a very big donation. And she said, I felt like I was on Broadway. It wasn't a big Broadway kind of production. We didn't have all the pizzazz, but they saw the effort we put into it, the costume, the decor, the props. They saw we tried our best to make it wondrous. And because we tried so hard to bring that effect, it was indeed wondrous. And the story still stood as a lesson and an example of community building. So I believe, to answer your question, oh well, we're going to receive great, great support. I can feel it already. And we're thankful to mention again Basilica Hudson. The flyer, it was misprinted Basilica Industria. It's Basilica Hudson, who has very generously offered us to use their space. And the production, of course, is May 21st, 22nd at 7 p.m., and May 23rd at 5 p.m. All performances are free, as they have always been since 2002, open to the public. And, of course, due to the COVID restrictions, we do have to require that you wear a mask when you come there. And I'd ask you to call 518-653-2086 to establish a reservation. Mm-hmm. Now, because that is a phone, that one person's phone, if they don't answer, and I know the person does not have voicemail because they only allowed visual voicemail on that phone, you can text that number, 518-653-2086, and leave information, name, phone number, and email, and we will tender your reservation, and we will text you a confirmation of that reservation in case you cannot get through live.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Badilla, for being on today's show. We kind of like the end, you know, 6:30. We are going to be back right after the local, the plane, wait, oh, the news update, my bad. Again, thank you, Ms. Badilla's play, or no, your play, right?
Yes, Fire Dance, mm-hmm. A selection of First Nation stories presented at Basilica Hudson, 110 South Front Street in Hudson, New York. You will be wearing face masks to enter, and you can call 518-653-2086 for reservations. Performances are May 21st and 22nd at 7 p.m. and May 23rd at 5 p.m. And again, all performances are free.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll be back after the news update.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Stacey Sherman is reporting for Bloomberg that Governor Andrew M. Cuomo signed a bill April 16th requiring all internet service providers in New York to provide affordable high-speed access for low-income families. Cuomo said during a briefing Friday at the Northland Workforce Training Center in Buffalo, providers can charge those families no more than $15 a month. Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Alphabet Incorporated, joined Cuomo for the bill signing. Schmidt chairs a 15-member state commission focused on using technology to help the state reopen better than it was before the virus. It was also announced that an emergency fund from Schmidt Futures and the Ford Foundation will provide free internet access to 50,000 students statewide during the 2021-22 school year. The bill passed by the state legislature caps a basic broadband plan at $15 a month and a higher speed plan at $20. Currently, a basic high-speed plan costs on average more than $50 a month. Schmidt said universal broadband access is the first and most important priority of the commission. He said, and I quote, "Internet is no longer optional," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Think of the generation that we could be creating that are not learning because we didn't give them internet access," end quote. Read the full story at Yahoo Finance. Aaliyah Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Ghent resident Christopher Cornell and Hudson Second Ward Supervisor Abdus Maya, the local Working Families Party candidates in Columbia County Court. Both men are represented by John Champoli of counsel with Messina, Perello, and Hill of Sayville, Suffolk County. They claim official party signatures on the certificate of authorization for working families candidates clipped from other documents and are therefore not genuine signatures. Champoli filed a petition against Ghent Town Board candidates Mallory Moore, Lori Johnson, and Carl Quinn, and Second Ward Alderwoman Tiffany Garagia. Garagia is looking to unseat Maya as Second Ward Supervisor. Columbia County Board of Elections Democratic Commissioner Kenneth Dow said there is no indication that Cornell is running for office. Dow called the case total nonsense because a signature by law can be presented in a number of ways. He said, and I quote, "There is a lot of stuff that is in the law that indicates this is perfectly permissible, so that's why I think this is really nonsense," end quote. There is a statewide coordinated attempt by the Republican Party to knock people off the Working Families Party line, and information has been fabricated by people willfully ignoring the law, Dow said. Champoli argues that an original document with original signatures must be filed with the County Board of Elections, and Working Families failed to do so. Dow said the focus on candidates Mort, Johnson, Quinn, and Garagia are based on where the petitioners Cornell and Maya can vote. Maya did not challenge any Hudson candidates on the ballot other than Garagia. However, the outcome of the case would impact if the almost 30 Working Families Party candidates can be listed on the party's ballot line because they are all on the same disputed certificate of authorization, Dow said. Maya said this week he challenged the Board of Elections specifically against Garagia. Maya said he has not yet received a decision from the board and only took action through the Board of Elections, not in court. Maya denied any connection to Cornell. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Mid-Hudson News reports that on April 14th, Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan signed an executive order as part of his county's version of a, and I quote, "Green New Deal," end quote. The measure mandates any construction of renewable or green energy infrastructure projects must hire local unions and local private contractors and pay a prevailing wage. Ryan said, and I quote, "To me, the core part of the Green New Deal is creating good-paying union jobs as we do that work to protect our environment, to transition to clean energy, and really to rebuild our infrastructure coming out of a once-in-a-century pandemic," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Today, Ulster County is going to continue to lead in both protecting our environment and making sure we're doing right by our working people and especially our partners in the building trades," end quote. The new law will be used on an upcoming solar project the county is building on a landfill. Todd Dorio, the president of the Hudson Valley Building and Constructing Trade Council, said, and I quote, "Evidence shows that higher wages due to prevailing wage does not slow the demand to build solar projects. Only 6 to 11% of total project cost on solar projects are wages. A 50% in labor costs would only increase the project costs by 3 to 5%. So on a $10 million solar project that we have maybe $300,000 would ensure good wages," end quote. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com. Porcupine Soup is reporting an online free service that has been established to provide information on available locations that offer COVID-19 vaccinations, including many in Greene and Columbia counties. VaccineFinder.org is a search tool that allows users to enter a zip code and distance range and to select the brand of vaccine preferred. A list of locations that offer the vaccine appears, including information on if the shots are currently in stock. The website is operated by epidemiologists and software developers at Boston Children's Hospital and supported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It is updated daily. Appointments cannot be made through Vaccine Finder and must be made directly at the location offering the vaccine. Appointments are required at most locations. The Greene County list of sites includes Greene County Public Health, Kelly's Pharmacy in Greenville and Coxsackie, CVS in Cairo, Hannah Ford in Cairo, Walgreens in Greenville and Catskill, Price Chopper in Catskill, Walmart in Catskill, Wyndham Pharmacy and Wellness RX in Tannersville. As of April 15th, approximately 45% of Greene County's adult population had received at least one dose of the vaccine, and 29% have been fully vaccinated. Read the full story at porcupinesoup.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Welcome back to Clubhouse Radio. What's it called? Dang, I forgot. Oh my god. The song that you were just listening to was Get Lucky by who?
Daft Punk.
Daft Punk. Okay. Me and DJ Shaw Money is here, and our next guest is a local poet and recovering heroin addict who only 5 weeks ago was released from prison. He's here today to talk about his new show called Recover Together. Phil Schmidt.
Unlock doors. I'll be home again soon. Back to my own room, where I'll sit and I'll think till I know what to do. I'll be a better man, and I'll have a better plan. And when the going gets too tough, well, I'll do the best I can. Because I know that I can do this. I'm stronger now, and I can prove it. I've got this far, and now I can say that. I know that I'll get through this. But it wasn't always that way. At first, I struggled day to day, till I made myself believe that in the end, I'd be okay. I'm not moving on, just moving up. Now that I feel I found how to be enough. Not enough for other people, enough for me. It's time that I gained my own trust. I've loved and I've lost, and I've learned the true cost of a life filled with misery and the pain that I've caused. My trial was by fire, condemned by my desire. I was plagued for so long that I believed I was a liar. Now the gates have all closed, I'm locked in and alone, but I see what I never saw, that I'm in control. And my psyche is restored, I'll wallow no more. I'm feeling better for sure, my future's filled with unlocked doors.
That was Unlocked Doors, one of Phil's many poems that he had written while he was in jail or in prison. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So that poem, how do you bring the message from the poem into your show?
Well, I feel creativity is a huge part of recovery and coping in general. So I'm really big about proving that the best way to recover is to do it together. Addiction is a really serious thing. And I spent a lot of time in jail just thinking about all of this. So I came up with a message that I wanted to tell. And I decided that I want to help people recover, or people that have had trouble with mental health or anything. And I want to let them know that getting help is okay. I'm trying to start a movement that will eliminate the stigma of the word junkie, because I think that's a big thing that stops people from even wanting to start to recover. And they need to know that it's okay, and they should be respected for wanting to recover. There's so much that we could do and that can be done to help these people that just isn't. And the first thing, I think, is to eliminate the stigma of the word junkie, like I said. And that's a big part of what I plan on doing.
So you said you have two other poems, right?
I do, but I'm going to use those right before I get off the air, just as closers. But they're super meaningful as well.
So can you tell us a little bit more about addiction and what you went through?
When I was 18 years old, my mother died. And that was very, very traumatic to me. And I wasn't sure how to cope with it emotionally. So I turned to hard drugs pretty quickly, and they truly ruined my life. In future shows, we'll talk way more about it, but it just spiraled down and out of control very quickly. It really ruined my life and changed everything about me, who I was, my morals. I honestly didn't care about who I hurt, and it got to the point where I committed a crime that was completely out of character. Anybody that knows me can tell you that what I did is not something that I would have done had I been thinking like my normal self. So my whole goal now is to help people who are going through something similar, or hopefully even before they start going through it. I want to use my story, my experiences, to inspire them and to change minds. I want to save people's lives, because I think everything I went through would end up being worth it if I could just use it to change even one person's life.
Okay. So what really made you, like, decide that the way you were going, like you said, I'm assuming you changed while you was in prison, right?
Yeah.
So what kind of led to that change?
Well, I did a lot of time in the box, actually, solitary confinement. And there's not much to do in there but think. So I spent a long time trying to figure out who I was, like who I am, who heroin had made me be, and how I could get back to being the original person that I am. And I'm a strong advocate for medically assisted recovery. And I strongly believe that the antidepressants that I was prescribed in prison helped me to get back to where I needed to be. But throughout all that, I really just thought about everything that I went through and how much I hurt my family and just all of these terrible things that I had done. And I just woke up one day and I decided I can't do it again. I can't do any of those things. That's not who I am. And it made me almost instantly realize my purpose. And this is my purpose. I'm here to help people, to show them they don't have to do what I've done. And I'm very passionate about it. This really means a lot to me. And I'm going to work really hard on all of this.
Was there any specific person or group of people who helped you while you were in prison?
Well, it's actually, it's funny that you ask that. Really, my main support came from my sister, Justine. She was amazing. She's really like the biggest support system that I had even before I went to prison, but especially in prison. And if it weren't for her, none of what I'm doing right now would ever have even came to be. And speaking of people who motivated me, it's crazy. The first guest that you guys just had on the show, Mrs. Pamela Bedilla, she's been motivating me since I was very little through the shows that she used to do at my school. And I hope to be as passionate and successful with the movement I'm trying to start as she is with what she does.
So what is your ultimate goal for your podcast?
The ultimate goal? I want to fight the opiate epidemic, but not just the opiate epidemic. My ultimate goal would be to save one person's life, even one person. But what I hope will happen is that I save thousands. I wish I could save everybody. I don't want another person to have to die from doing drugs or to feel like there's no other answer to their problem to where they have to commit suicide. Mental health and addiction are like, they go hand in hand, and it's really important that they notice they're not alone. And I want everybody who involves themselves with me, my movement, or whatever, and even the people who don't, I want them to know that even if they feel alone, they're not, that I'm with them,
That's even so if nobody else is. That's noble.
I appreciate that. It's just, I really mean it, and it's just, I don't want people to have to suffer or have to go through the things I went through to realize that there's a better way. There's better things that you could be doing.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to creativity, right? You like poem, you know, I take a lot of creativity and stuff. What are your thoughts on it? Or like, how does that help you?
I feel like creativity is an extremely powerful resource at a lot of addicts' disposal. A lot of people I met while I was in prison were there for things they did while they were high. But most of them had an incredible ability to be creative in so many different ways, whether they wrote poems or they rapped or they could cut hair really well. Or they made things, you know. It's just they were extremely creative. And if we could get together and use our creativity in a way that lets us help other people who are struggling, we could change the world. That's my ultimate goal of my life. I want to change the world. I want anybody who's ever wanted to stop or look for help,
to be willing to step forward and not care what anybody thinks of them, because the only thing anybody should be thinking of them is that they deserve to be respected for coming forward and looking for help. I can't even explain how much all of this means to me. I'm genuinely, genuinely serious about caring about everybody, about caring about all of this.
So if you don't mind, we're kind of coming down to like the end, you know, your two poems you had, right? Can you
Okay. I would love to read my last two poems. As a matter of fact, these are my favorites by far, which is why I thought it'd be a good idea to close with them. The first one is called "Do I Inspire You?" Do I inspire you? Because you inspire me. And what inspires me is to be inspiring. To be a light inside the dark, a light in which I bring. A song to lips of broken souls, a song for all to sing. Now and then I come to think that my day soon will come. When I strive to reach my goals, I never walk, I run. I fight against all odds until my work is finally done. I've never met an obstacle I could not overcome. And to this day, I try to be the very best I can. I come to meet adversity with well-made battle plans. And these confines I've constructed, I've built with my own hands. As I did my destiny. Alas, I'm just a man. Though I never fail, I falter and find I am to be. A man with goals accomplished, a man with dreams achieved. These drugs have been my downfall, but they also set me free. Because now I can express myself through rhymes and poetry. Do I inspire you? Because you inspire me. And what inspires me is to be inspiring. This next one's called Immortalized, and it's my personal favorite. I just feel that it's very powerful, and it means a lot to me. So here you go. The world's a crazy place, you know. It's filled with so much spit. But sometimes I just can't control the need to nurture it. Because everything just lives to die while we all just die to live. That's why I cannot fathom why it matters if we sin. I've got a tale of mine, a tale that which begins. A heart that's broken from the start, a bell that never rings. He fell apart not long ago and one day finally broke. His heart then slowly turned to stone, despairing as he choked. So is it so surprising that he finally turned to drugs? Tell me, what did you expect? They took the one he loved. As all his world began to fall and crumble to the ground, he tried to call and ask for help, but no one could be found. And all the words that he once spoke seemed not to make a sound. Lost, he couldn't find his way, any way but down. All the while he tumbled, he never lost his love for the world and those he cared, the ones he left above. He crept along the bowels of the earth and of his soul. Eternity had come to pass as he lost all control. He yearned so badly for the life that he had left behind. But can you really fix yourself while trapped inside your mind? Some things you just can't replace, like family and time. But now they're all immortalized here inside my mind.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to talk and to let everybody know about the show I plan on doing. And also, if anybody has a Facebook, look up the page HHR. Helping Hands Recovery, and feel free to check it out, give us a like, and let other people know, because we need as much help as we can get.
Okay, so we're coming down to the end of our time. Thank you for listening. Catch us next week and every Friday at 6 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. If you want to be a guest on our if you want to be a guest or get involved in our programming, our radio show, email our tellingourtruth at gmail.com. Shout out to Shout out to Wave Farm and WGXC for making this radio program possible. Shout out to the Catskill and Youth Catskill and Hudson Youth Clubhouses and Mental Health Association of Columbia Green Counties for supporting this program. Shout out to Phil Schmidt for coming through and nice voice. Shout out to sound engineer DJ Shaw Money.
Thank you.
I just want to let everybody know before the end of the show that I truly love you all. And if anybody feels lost or like they're alone, just know that I do genuinely care. Thank you all for this opportunity.